This week on the program, you know, I usually have some sort of intro thing here, but this movie is just a piece of shit. It's Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins. I'm Andrew Jupin.
Steven Sadek in Yellowface.
Eric Siska, piece of shit.
Rim My Williams.
And we hate movies. Hello, everyone. Welcome to We Hate Movies. Thank you for tuning in, as always. Thank you for sitting with us as we gather around the table and say what we're thankful for. And this year, we're thankful for Wilford Brimley. It is Brimsgiving in full effect here on the show.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about Remo Williams' The Adventure Begins from 1985, directed by Guy Hamilton. This is the worst thing we've touched in a while, friends.
Well, I was like, you know, this is, I think, Chris, you said this last time. It's like, it's a perennial all-star request, right? Like,
yep.
The phone lines in January light up every year for Remo Williams. And I was like, so it's got to be something. And I sat down the other night and I watched it. I was like, that's what you guys are talking about?
Dude, I had the same reaction, Steve. It was just like a real, what the fuck are you talking about, everybody?
It's just, the headlines are big in this movie. Like, the problems are humongous.
Yes, as
there's
Steve mentioned.
There's just not little stuff. There's no, like, little details that you're looking for.
No, I mean, I think the biggest fish to fry here, as Steve referenced in the intro, is Joel Grey. Legendary, white-as-fuck Broadway superstar Joel Grey portraying an elderly Korean man in full-on you-only-live-twice fucking Asian makeup.
Not only is he playing an old, like, Korean guy, but he's playing one from, I guess, a legendary town where all martial arts stems from.
Yes. Sure.
Yeah, dude, like, on top of it all, it's fucking, like, mysticism, too.
Yeah, it's all the same shit. You know, all those cultures? Yeah, fucking same shit. Probably came out of a hole in the ground? I don't know. Korea?
My favorite, I like the fact that, like, he makes a point. He's like, I'm Korean. And then he says, not like those Chinese dogs.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Jesus, man. Okay. Yep.
Well, this is based on a novel series called The Destroyer, which just sounds like dad airport horseshit from the 70s. Yep.
Yeah, you know what it is, dude? The Destroyer, it just sounds like it's a fucking Dirty Harry sequel.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
You know, like the Deadpool fucking, you know, Maximum Force, whatever, Magnum Force. Well, you
back,
know?
Back in the day, it used to have like you could have cool spy, like Cobra, or like, you know, the Skim Affair, or stuff like that. Like, now it's more like Ted Beecher, Navy Investigator.
Wasn't Jack Reacher getting up to all sorts of shenanigans, reach arounds?
But that's just what I mean. Is like, he's not like a super spy who's badass. He's just very good at being a Navy investigator.
Oh, is he actually a Navy investigator?
Something like that.
Yeah,
He's like a JAG kind of dude. Which is weird because he's just also like this shit kicking whatever. I thought that first Jack Reacher was fine. I didn't see the second one.
Hold on. So the series description of The Destroyer: the series hero Remo Williams is a Newark cop framed for a crime and sentenced to death. His death is faked by the U.S. government so he can be trained as an assassin for CURE, a secret organization set up by John F. Kennedy to work outside the law.
Why would you exclude that from this motion picture?
Exactly. Make it like Kennedy's alive even. It's like an older guy with a mustache. Like, I faked it.
Yeah, totally, dude. Era, talk about faking your own death, Remo.
Actually,
hello.
Me and Sam Giancana were good buddies.
It would be something if they fleshed out this organization literally at all in this movie. But that is actually very scary because we all know that John F. Kennedy Jr., his son, actually did that when he founded QAnon.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. How could we forget? Speaking of shit, I wish we could flush forever. One of the biggest insults, I think, as far as like them trying to adapt this book series into a motion picture franchise is, of course, the intention of, well, we're going to make him like a blue collar James Bond. Mm. So, like, what do? You fucking hire a dude who wrote Moonraker and another Bond. You hire Guy Hamilton, who directed Goldfinger, Diamonds Are Forever, Live and Let Die, and The Man with the Golden Gun. Like, you're trying as hard as you can to fuse that DNA here. And you know what? You're fucking missing any semblance whatsoever of exciting action.
Well, no, you hire all those people, and then you tell them, don't worry about it. Take it easy. Don't try too much.
The stakes are so low the entire film. The charisma, I mean, and I like Fred Ward. I actually I thought Fred Ward was in The Mandalorian recently. I got excited for 2 seconds. I was wrong.
By the way, listen to our, we're doing this new, not new, we last year we did The Mandalorian Half Hour on Patreon. We're doing it again for season 2 out now, and you can hear Steve be absolutely confused and think that Tamara Morrison is Fred Ward.
And I was really excited. I was like, ooh, Fred Ward. So I like Fred Ward. And I think, you know, he's got some spots here, but like, this is not for him. It's just he's totally wrong in the role. He's not that charismatic to lead this kind of a movie.
But, I mean, yes, he's wrong for the role, but they literally get everything wrong about this
that's
movie.
Fair. Like,
everything is flatlining. The script, all the other actors, Joel Grey and this weird thing. Also, the movie is 90 something minutes of him training, which I know our Star Wars fans are happy about that. Then nothing much happens.
But like, also, blue collar James Bond goes against the very nature of James Bond.
Yep.
Like, what are you trying to do here? One that comes out to John Mellencamp rather than the fucking little scope thing?
You can't do American James Bond. Just kind of doesn't work. With Jason Bourne, it's like, you see the villainy of America in that, right?
Yes.
The organization.
Yeah.
It has to be that angle. You can't just have some dude fucking getting into scrapes and it being like, cool, American imperialism.
Yes. Yeah, and I mean, the other part of it too is like, you know, you're kidnapping this dude, faking his death, and then saying like, we're the people that keep our eyes on all the people. We report directly to the president, like whatever this horse shit is. But then like, you take away all the other things that are exciting about watching James Bond movies, which are, and I already touched on the action, but like, the clothing, the locations, the lifestyle. You know what I mean? Like, this movie is him fucking living in a disgusting Soho loft with Joel Grey.
Yeah.
You know, eating like bowls of rice every day, sleeping on a fucking cot. And it's just like, none of this is appealing.
Also, the sexuality of James Bond, too, is nowhere to be found.
Absolutely.
They try and force it at the end with Kate Mulgrew, and they are just two sticks hitting against each other, man.
You have yourself a 1985 Kate Mulgrew. She's absolutely stunning in this movie. It's like nothing. Like, she's going up against Rima Williams, and you can hear the fucking flat line from the EKG.
Also, I think she's in a different movie.
Yeah,
whole other movie into this movie.
Thought that too, Cabin.
It's insane.
She's in like an episode of Knight Rider, and they cut out all the parts with the car, and they just like, and they're like, oh, we could use this Knight Rider footage where like Kit is walking around a base really important major who's played by Kate Mulgrew. Oh, we'll just use that. We'll just get Kate Mulgrew at the end. We'll tie it together. It'll be a Rima Williams movie.
I think you're right, Steve, because if you look at parts, like if you're looking at the way her mouth is moving, it appears that the line is like, well, what do you think, Kit? And instead it's like, well, what do you think, Rima Williams?
I will say, back to the charisma of Fred Ward and lack thereof, who auditioned for this movie got close, didn't get it because he was too unknown at the time. Bruce Willis. And is a better movie. It just is.
The other thing, I mean, you're totally right, because the other thing that they insist on making Fred Ward try to do in this movie is be funny with the one-liners. And as much as I like Fred Ward too, he's not a comedian in my book. It's these fucking snappy lines that he's throwing out at Joel Grey throughout the entire movie. It just does not work.
It's just Fred Ward is always in charge. That's what he is good at. Like, him learning stuff and like having to be a guy who like hears something and is just like, okay, okay, I'll give it a shot. Like, that is Bruce Willis to a T. Yeah,
exactly.
But Fred Ward is very funny in Naked Gun, 33rd and a Third, just because he's the butt of every joke, basically. And he's got dry deliveries.
Perhaps me?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Wow. You just fucking... triggered a fucking a time quake in my brain.
Kevin, I thought I was having a fucking acid flashback, dude. I have not watched that movie in 25 years.
That is a great ending to a great question mark.
If yeah. I was standing up, Chris, I would have needed to sit down. And that's unbelievable.
And that is the thing. Sorry, I can't go on.
No, I can't.
That is the thing about Bruce Willis versus Fred Ward. Fred Ward was like 43, 44 when this movie was made.
Right.
And like him being like this like wet behind the ears whatever doesn't make sense. You get a younger Bruce Willis in his 20s or early 30s. At least we're doing some of that.
But that's the thing, dude, because it's like, so you got this guy, Mac whatever the fuck, and then Wilford Brimley are the two guys in this organization. And I wanted to be like, was he really the fucking only candidate you had for this program? Was Fred Ward, beat cop Fred Ward? Like, there was no one else in the entire country?
Well, we had Ted Kennedy, but there was a problem.
Oh, my God.
Could you imagine Ted Kennedy pulling anything? Like, doing? I guess him covering up that murder, I guess, is a good
spy
right. Yeah, he was thing, already actually. A lot of experience with assassination already.
I take it back. He would have been great, Chris.
Well, okay. Yeah, he passed the first test. He covered up murder pretty easily there. But then it got blown right the fuck open, so we had to cut him loose.
Yeah. Steve, what are you going to say?
Oh, no, Steve, I just had a question, though. It was something you made me think of, like when you said Bruce Willis, they passed on him because he wasn't that big yet. What fucking international sensation was Fred Ward?
It's a great question. I mean, he's in The Great Escape, you know, like he's a known quantity at least a little bit, right?
But you're transitioning at it. Like, this is like where like you're starting to come towards Tremors and Player territory, right? This is 80. What's this year again?
Tremors is 90, and this is 85. So we're a little off.
Yeah.
He's not in The Great Escape. He's in The Right Stuff and Escape from Alcatraz.
Right, and he's in Carney with Gary Busey. I mean, there's actually not a lot to go. He was always on like the peripheral of these films, and I guess this was one of his big, well, here you go, and it kind of just is a swing and a miss. And I don't think it's entirely his fault. And I don't think Bruce Willis could have pulled this off either, because I feel like this is a script problem from the jump.
Absolutely. Well, no, it is. Yeah. And once you put once you cast Joel Grey, you're in real trouble. But I mean, like, I'm not putting this all on Fred Ward versus whatever, but it just shows you how miscast he is.
And you're not really like, I don't think they're putting too much into the fact that he is Korean. Like, they don't have too many details about Korea in it.
Well, of course not, because fucking nobody who wrote this movie knew jack shit about Korea.
So just change the script and get, like, Mako or somebody to play this character.
Get James Hong in there. We're having a great time. And, yes, he could be Japanese. And we're done. You know what I mean? Like, and it's a totally fine little movie.
You could also just have
a Korean actor.
An Asian person who's not Korean also just doing it. And it's way fucking closer than Joel Grey with this, may I remind the people in the courtroom, an Academy Award nominated makeup job.
Yeah. And a Golden Globe nominated performance?
Yes. Yep. Oh, yeah, dude.
Incredible. Yep. Absolutely incredible.
Fuck this.
We loved that in the 80s, though. What
we
was
did?
That
Linda
one?
Hunt.
Yes,
Linda
thank
Hunt.
You. Exactly.
And Killing Fields.
Fuck, I forgot about that. Was that another award?
No, not Killing Fields. Year of Living Dangerously.
She won the Oscar for
that. She did win the Oscar for that.
Jesus.
And I mean, like, they put him in this fucking Klingon makeup, and it's like, guys... He's just Korean.
I don't even get
a fucking Korean person.
I don't even get why we need to have martial arts training in this movie. You don't really see much of it. I mean, the closest you get to pretty much is Remo Williams holding onto a log at some point towards the fucking third act.
But, well, and that's the other thing, Eric. If it was like actual martial arts training and that he was using in these, you know, operation scenes, fine. But all that Joel Grey is teaching him is fucking mystic magic bullshit, fucking pressure point, you know, poke of death stuff. And then, like, he's like diving headfirst into, you know, piles of sand, just like garbage Bugs Bunny physics.
Yes, it's all like this Asian mysticism nonsense where like Joel Grey at the end of the movie can walk on water because he just knows, he just, you know, you be like water. I guess maybe it's a Bruce Lee-ism or something, but it's just so fucking dumb.
It's so dumb.
And it's very different from the end of Being There, where it's actually a point, goddammit.
Thank you. Another great fucking spy movie, Being There.
Amazing. Incredible
Chauncey
spy
Chauncey Gardner
film.
Was a CIA asset.
PSYOP.
Was, yep, exactly.
Oh, we're getting to the PSYOP, that kind of episode.
I will say, a nice thing about this movie, because it's fucking shit and I hate it top to bottom.
I really did.
I hate it so much. I like actively had like a reaction watching this movie. But I will say, I do appreciate the on-location New York City shooting we're doing here.
Which is where we start, which is kind of, I mean, it's not fun. It's a scene. So he's got a, here's my question, because he's got this mustache and he's listening to Marv Albert. Great Marv Albert cameo.
Yep. Marv Albert is on the radio calling it what it sounds like a disastrous Knicks Laker game from LA where the Knicks are just getting their ass handed to them.
Sounds about right.
Surprise, surprise.
Steve, recall, Steve, who was like floating around the team in the mid 80s? Are we talking like Earl the Poro Monroe or was that earlier?
It's probably Bernard Kingish here, is my guess. I mean, I would have been one when this came out. So I'm a little before my Knicks fandom, but I believe that's around Bernard King.
Is before In Your Face Mason or?
Oh, yeah.
So there's also a little Jets piggy on his dashboard. So this guy is a solid New York sports fan.
Oh, that's right, dude. You have the little Jets Miss Piggy dash thing, whatever it is.
That thing is weird. I don't know. That thing creeped me out. But also, like, so he's got this mustache. Later on, they say that he has plastic surgery. Did anyone notice anything different about his face here?
I think his nose might have had, like, a bigger bridge or something.
Got it. Okay.
Absolutely, yeah.
I wanted to go back and rewind, Steve, because I had the same thought when they're telling him that, and I was like, what are you talking about? It was just Fred Ward. Where is this plastic surgery?
We surgically removed the mustache.
So he's like sitting there. It's sort of like he's in Brooklyn. It's like back when the Brooklyn Navy Yards were still an incredibly, you know, worn down, crime dangerous place to be. He's sitting in his car listening to the game, eating burgers, and he sees like a dude run by and then like two dudes chasing him. So he goes to check it out and this dude's like getting the shit kicked out of him by these two guys. He steps in and then, you know, beats these guys up and it's like we're tricking you, actually. This dude is gonna hit you in the back with a board with a bunch of nails sticking out of it.
Was this just a trick to get a cop or something, or was this like
I think it's a gang initiation or something.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe it was honest to goodness, like class solidarity. Like, yes, while we are beating each other up, now that a cop is here, let us combine our forces for the good.
Right. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. Let's beat up this cop.
My favorite thing about this, Steve, is that Fred Ward is in his car and like he sees a little something happening. He's like, but I got this egg sandwich.
Yes.
I'll get to these toughs as soon as sandwichly possible.
It is. Yeah. It's real, man. I felt that. It's like you get an email at work and it's like you're kind of eating lunch. Like, I don't know. It's got an exclamation point on it, but I don't have to do anything about that. Like,
well, the building's not on fire. Sandwich.
What do they got? A couple wallets? I got this egg sandwich. And when it's cold, you can't eat it after that.
So they, you know, he beats the shit out of these guys and then like gets in his car and it's like, uh-oh, now like a fucking huge dump truck comes out of nowhere, rams his cop car into the river.
And it's driven by J.A. Preston, is like the bad guy. Not the bad, his lead contact. By the way, J.A. Preston, you know, I've seen him in stuff, and you've seen him in stuff. He's in A Few Good Men, he plays the judge, a bunch of stuff. He is on a list. I love IMDb user lists. My favorite thing in the world. Uh-huh. Actors / actresses over 80 still living. A list of 985 people created 10 months ago.
What a stupid thing to make. Because then, like, are you updating that when people, like, check out, you know?
Insanely, number one on a list of 985 people, James C. King, Doogie Howser's dad.
What?
Number two, M. Emmett Walsh.
Nice.
Yeah. Michael Constantine, Tom Skerritt, Philip Baker Hall. I could read this whole thing.
Wow, Tom Skerritt's over 80, huh?
According to this IMDb list.
Wow, that's nuts. Mm-hmm.
He's also in Air Force One.
Mm, yes.
He's also in a suit. We will do it one day. Stay tuned. Firebirds, the Top Gun ripoff with Nick Cage.
Ooh.
Oh, I never saw that. Oh,
I never saw that either, but I want to see it now.
Yeah, it's quite something.
So, yeah, he goes into the bay. You cut to his funeral, LOL. And it's like, you know, whatever his name is, like Sam Markin, I think.
Samuel Edward Macon. So he could have gone on to actually be a presidential assassin.
And Remo wakes up in a hospital bed. Now, so he's got facial reconstructive surgery, sure.
Right.
But he's got shaving cream all over his face. Like, oh no, they shaved my mustache. I'm like, did they do the surgery before they shaved your mustache? Because I feel like that's got to go first.
They must have done it initially, and now she's shaving him from the years, the weeks of him just sitting there healing.
A little bit of like a Steven Seagal Marked for Death situation.
Yeah.
No.
Was that Marked for Death? Am I thinking of the right movie?
Hard to Kill.
Hard to Kill, yes. A Coma Cat episode there, yeah.
Yeah, previous episode. If you're new to the show, check out that Hard to Kill episode.
The most embarrassing part of all of this, and like I would be, well, nah, I'm not going to lie, I'm not curious, but I guess I wonder just now and won't follow up with research if in the books he is given the name the same way he's given the name in this movie, which is this dude, McCready, whatever J.A. Preston's character name is in this movie.
It's like Con McCready, yeah. And then they call him Mac for short.
Mac, right. And he's just like, yeah, your name is, and he's like usual suspecting, and he's holding a bedpan, and it's like Remo bedpan from Williams, Nevada, or like whatever it is. And he's like, Williams, Remo Williams. Yeah, your name's Remo Williams now.
This is where Kaiser Soze came from. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And like Fred Ward's got a line here. You know, we've made fun of this kind of line so much, but it's been so long. It's one of these where you just list government agencies and he's like, who are you? FBI, CIA, Salvation Army? Is everybody laughing in the movie theater?
That's the thing, man. This movie is an action slash comedy, and the comedy is dreadful.
Absolutely.
Like, if you think about something like, I mean, I talk about it all the time because I guess it's my favorite movie, but like Austin Powers does this, right? It's the, I mean, doesn't do the action.
Yeah.
It's like James Bond, but funny. And like, they lean really heavy into the comedy. The jokes are Joel Grey talks like that.
Yep. Yeah, exactly, dude. It's like this fucking screenplay was written by noted famous comedian Mike Huckabee.
Yeah. Huckabee and Mark Wahlberg got together and put a good script together.
Yo, Governor Huckabee, I have to say, I read the screenplay. Great pass, bro, but how about this? Maybe that Vietnamese guy gets beaten up. Well, actually, he's Korean. Can we make him Vietnamese and then beat him up?
What's the difference, Mike?
Well, Mark, this is Mike Huckabee. This is suddenly a Mike Huckabee impression that doesn't work. How about you beat up some dogs instead? How about you and my boys just wrestle around in the backyard and kill some dogs?
I gotta say, the size of those boys, one of them ate those dogs.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
That is a dog chili situation.
Here's what happened. Oh, fucking Mike Huckabee walks out of the room. Everything seems normal. He walks back in, and one of his big, large sons is swallowing a dog's tail. He's like, what was that?
Daddy Mark, you don't understand. If I eat a grilled dog, I get the dog's soul. And it becomes part of me. Daddy Mike, pet my head.
Now, Junior, I am such a religious, pious individual that I always love to give any of God's children the benefit of the doubt. But when I came back from the kitchen, son, did I see you slurping a dog's tail into your mouth like a thing of spaghetti?
No, I didn't do that, Daddy Mike.
Am I hearing rough barks coming from your stomach?
No.
Okay. Get me out of here.
I ate the dog's soul, and now I'm part dog, and that's why I poo in the yard.
Daddy, can you get me some bully sticks from the store? I got a hankering.
So yeah, Remo gets taken too. And this here's something. This movie last week, I think we gave 10 to Midnight a 1 on the Brimley scale on our Patreon episode. That's like a we didn't say it, but I think that's like a 10 on the Brimley scale.
Oh yeah. Our Patreon episode this month is The China Syndrome, and it's on patreon.com/wehatemovies. And yes, that is a fucking movie with Wilfred Brimley in it.
Yeah, this gets like a 6 or a 7, I think.
Here's the thing.
No, he does not stand up. He will not stand up.
I checked it for Steve asked me to check last night. I double checked you, Steve, that not one standing performance.
Are you shitting me? He's not standing once in this movie.
All sitting.
Because I watched this on Thursday, Chris, while we're doing this on Saturday. And Chris was like just starting. I was like, hey, man, could you do me a huge favor?
Here's the thing. Like, I can't rate it that high, Steve. I have to disagree with you.
Okay.
Because he doesn't leave that office.
No.
I mean, you had Wilfred Brimley for fucking 2 afternoons, man.
Tops.
And this is what you got out of it. And it's just so obvious. So much of this movie is him, like you said, sitting there staring at this clearly fake computer system that he's got going. It's like a supercomputer, but it's like doing things that computer technology could not do in 1985.
It's almost exactly like the computer in The Thing. Like, it could do all this wild shit, apparently, and it's just there.
But he is watching crystal clear surveillance footage on this computer monitor, insane. And I do not think so.
Oh, no. And, like, this is the definition of a Brimley 4.
Yeah, that's about it. Okay, that's fair. Yeah.
Because he's not only is he not leaving an office, he's not leaving a chair. Like, I don't even get to see those nice muscular haunches going at it.
And he doesn't raise his voice. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I think you're right.
I mean, he's just so clearly bored in this movie. He's basically like the James Bond equivalent of like an M sort of figure, I guess. The closest thing. And I don't want to back us up because I hate this movie and let's just keep going. But quick thing. He gets to Wilfred Brimley's office in an ambulance that he has stolen from the hospital. He breaks out of the hospital, and this dude, Mac, is in the ambulance. He points a gun on him, and he's like, you know, just drive. The only fucking shining light in this movie that gave me any brightness at all was the ambulance driver who goes, hey, wait a minute, played by none other than the legendary Reginald Vell Johnson.
Yep.
And that's it. You don't see that guy again. Anyway.
And so basically Brimley's like, yeah, you're dead, but now you're Remo Williams. And we are we're an organization of 3 people. Now 3, because you're here. Congratulations.
Yeah, I mean, right.
Gonna need to see some ID there, Chief.
Well, that's the thing. He's like, we're secret assassins from the president himself. All the orders come from the president. I swear.
Okay. And then he says he's worked for 5 presidents, he says.
How am I? And it's just this random beat cop that then is dead. You see his funeral briefly, and it's like, never once does Remo Williams, or whatever his name used to be, grapple with any sense of his prior life whatsoever.
Nope. No, and the screenplay sort of carefully circumvents that and sort of absolves themselves of any responsibility, because they're like Brimley is very clearly like, well, goddamn what, you know, we needed to recruit somebody, and you're great because you were a tough-as-nails cop with absolutely no family, no friends, no social life. So it's like it absolves them from having to have a scene where, like, maybe he goes and checks in on his daughter secretly.
Yeah, that's right. We are a secret organization of losers, and I also don't have friends. We report to the president because we are teacher's pet.
We chose you because, remember, 5 years ago you hit on your brother's young daughter at a party, and you lost your family and you lost your friends, and literally no one could even speak to you anymore, and you've been thinking about killing yourself. Yeah, that's why we chose you. No one's gonna miss you.
But as it turns out, like, this is another, you know, like, grossly fascistic movie about, like, circumventing societal norms to get fucking justice.
Well, mommy, I think we're going to send Remo Williams into Iran.
yeah, he's there to sell the missiles.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, Ronnie, I got the best boy on it. Don't worry, Ronnie.
Oh, Ronnie, you would love him. He's got all sorts of sort of funny one-liners. It's amazing.
Oh, that's fantastic. What's his name?
Remot will ya? I forgot already. I don't know.
Let me check the bedpan. But don't worry, sir. He's a loser.
His name is Tommy Rubbermaid.
His name is Magnum Condom. Because I just looked at what I had in my pocket.
You know what? Never mind. I'm just going to call the company.
And like, yeah, I mean, it's just like, he, you know, the whole thing is like, I got this super secret computer that tells me anything I ever want to know. And like, what we do is we influence events throughout history by making assassinations and making it look like accidents, you see?
Right. Making it look like accidents is such a great, great part of this organization.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I don't know, man. Just shoot someone in the head.
The Central Whoopsie Daisy Department.
That's right. We're part of the CWD.
Oh yeah, dude. The CWD indeed. Yeah, we specialize in things like people falling down the stairs. You know, someone stands up on a roller coaster when they shouldn't.
You know, when
all sorts of believable accidents.
When a really important person at a really important dinner party farts, that's the CWD.
Whoopsie daisy, here we go.
If you could smell it, you know who dealt it, CWD.
He's handing out fucking business cards.
And then, like, this guy Mac is like, the cool thing is, Remo, you never get days off. You have to just do this for the rest of your life for some reason. And Remo's like, sounds good to me. Who am I? Like, I don't know. Like, how about, like, what am I get paid? Who am I supposed to kill? And also, like, what kind, like, I really need to be sure that I'm not being recruited by a weird militia here. I really need to know.
Exactly. And the problem, I mean, I feel like the Remo Williams character in general, and it's not just Fred Ward, is he's got, there's literally nothing there. It's
no,
an absolute blank slate. He does, and I know I said grapple before, but grapple with something, man.
Maybe.
Have something going on in your fucking head.
No, you're totally right, because he should be like, who are these guys? I don't, maybe he's like, maybe he has to like do his own research on them or something like that.
Exactly.
Or,
well, I mean, because the thing is, like, Mac is like, yeah, you have no fucking life. You work every day. And Brimley, because of course there's the, you know, Fred Ward has to be like, and if I say no,
yeah.
And, you know, Brimley's response is like, well, then we'll just murder you. So it's like, okay, man, then you need to have it, like, there's got to be something in it for Remo Williams, right? Well, and that's where I thought he was going to get, like, a rad apartment, cool car,
exactly.
Bunch of money, some ladies, you know?
Not even that. Make him vulnerable. Like, if he's like, yeah, we're going to kill you if you don't say yes, like, you're being forced to do this then. And that never comes up. Like, he doesn't really care that he's being forced to do this. He just thinks his whole struggle in this movie is that it's kind of weird that this Korean is here.
Yep, totally, dude.
I mean, Andrew, you also have a good point about the whole, like, cool cars or something or gizmos or anything. Because, like, if we're trying to do, like, a James Bond thing, James Bond didn't fucking share an apartment with some dude.
Exactly.
Yeah, totally, man. He's not driving around in some shitbox car.
And I mean, like, the way, and like, that's the thing, is I think you're supposed to really get off on this training stuff, and it just, it gets really boring really quickly.
It is so long, and it's a bunch of just nonsense. It's just this, like, oh, I'm from Sinju, Korea, where everything's from. Don't worry about
it. I mean,
it.
It's just one of those things where it's like, when you have these fucking creeps on the internet kvetching about, I didn't fucking see you know, Captain Marvel do this, and fucking Rey in Star Wars, I didn't see her do that. I'm like, motherfucker, you want to watch this shit? Watch Remo Williams. Watch someone train. It's boring as balls.
Yep.
And I mean, like, so, like, his first assassination is supposed to be on Chun, or on somebody he doesn't. He's not even given a name. He's not even given, like, a dossier. And, like, what you call it? Like, Mac just gives him a gun, like, hey, man, just go in there and fucking kill that guy. Like, hey, sounds cool. Secret government agent. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, man.
No, I mean, questions asked. Like, yeah, I guess I'll just blow this guy's brains out.
That's exactly what the mafia told the Iceman. Like, just go up to this guy in the street, just shoot him behind the head and get back in the car. That's it, baby.
Listen, right. Don't worry about this. Just take all this ecstasy, take this gun, and go into that club.
Totally. No, it's cool. The government, we will totally support you in this one.
Yes, you will just figure out who to kill in there, man. You're a secret agent.
This goes all the way to the president.
Yeah. And it's kind of a bullshit, like, sort of fake out here, too, because, like, they pull up.
And, you know, it's someplace in Manhattan. It's a nice looking like townhouse building. And Remo even has the line of like, oh, wow, like nice place there, huh? And then that's when Mac is like, yeah, the guy up there, you see that fucking guy up there? It's up there with my wife. Go kill that guy kind of a thing, right? So that when like he sneaks into the basement to like try to climb up and, you know, get this person, you know, this is when we meet Joel Grey. He's in the basement and like, you know, Remo Williams doesn't understand like he's the guy that he sent there to kill because Mac leaves no instruction, you know? So there's this whole thing of like, well, I'm the only one in the house, you know, I guess you're here for me kind of a thing. And you're just like, okay. Like I thought this was going to be the opportunity. Like I was still holding out hope, I guess, that Remo Williams would get to live in a cool apartment because I was like, oh, he's going to walk in and it's going to be like all the stuff that will entice him to keep doing this job.
And this, right. This was a real like weird moment for me. Cause I'm like, okay, this person's here. Wait, what is that?
Yeah,
that's Joel Grey.
Dude, you texted us all of that.
I was just like, it doesn't even look like Joel Grey. If the point of this was to have him there because it's Joel Grey who's a star, maybe want him to look like. But like, no, you could have just gotten an actor who's Korean. What the fuck is wrong with you?
This is why they got that nom for makeup, because they made him look like someone else, and it's not. But it doesn't. It doesn't look that convincing either.
And it's not a very Joel Grey performance either. Like, as
You want to hear about a great Joel Grey performance? There's a story that Chelsea told me the other night when we I was telling her I had to watch this movie. I did not subject her to this movie, but she was telling a story that Leslie Odom Jr., the actor who was in Hamilton, had where. Hamilton was still downtown at the Public. It hadn't gone to Broadway yet. And he knew he had a friend who was online to see the show. And in front of him was Joel Grey. Joel Grey goes up to the box office and he's like, oh, hi, Joel Grey. There were some tickets for me. And this was like, you know, when Hamilton was at the Public, it was like it hadn't exploded, but like in the community had exploded, you know. So the box office attendant like sees him. It was like, oh, fuck, Joel Grey himself is here. And it's like, oh, here you go, Mr. Grey. Like, here are your tickets. And Joel Grey turns around to this friend and just goes, I didn't have any tickets. Fucking just goes in. Dude, can you believe it?
That's a fucking baller move.
Yep. That's the performance of a lifetime right there. Not this racist shit.
I thought you were going to tell me he like jumped up on the stage and sang You'll Be Back.
Or two tickets, Hamilton. $200. Two tickets, Hamilton. Oh my God. $200 a piece.
Oh, Joel's got to eat tonight.
Not a lot of Remo Williams residuals coming in lately.
Yeah, totally.
Welcome in Hamilton, $200. It's Hamilton for $200, for $200.
Oh, that's another thing. That guy's not German.
He's fucking phony.
I mean, it is just so insane.
Well, apparently, the story, I mean, against IMDb, he turned the role down a couple of times. I'm like, good for you, Joel Grey, until they showed him the makeup, and he said, wow, I've got to do this.
No. Oh, God.
And I mean, like, it was the 80s, so it is what it is, and clearly, we were all on board. The man was nominated for a fucking Golden Globe.
We were definitely all on board until, like, a year ago.
Yeah.
It is, I mean, and it's just like he's dropping the R's, he's doing all the stuff, you know what I mean?
I mean,
like,
there is still a stark difference between what the fuck was that garbage Cameron Crowe movie that nobody could care about? Aloha.
Aloha, yes. Yeah.
Where Emma, what the fuck's her
Emma
face,
Stone.
Is playing a woman who's like, was she I thought she was supposed to be like.
Oh, Japanese? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Asian descent. I forget exactly.
And it's just Emma Stone, and it's terrible, and it's whatever. But like the fucking prosthetics,
and
the transformation, such as it is, like just takes this into a whole new strata of like, you fucking morons thought this was a good idea.
It's the difference between like Aloha, okay, that's a horror to watch, but like this, you put effort into the horror.
Yes.
Like Aloha was just like, oh yeah, we don't care, so it's a horror. Where it's like, it's we're lazy working racism. Hard. We're working hard to make sure you're horrified.
Lazy racism versus hardcore. Like we need to make this as racist as possible.
And I'll tell you, man, you want to talk about? We were cool. We were on board for this for a long time. A little movie called The Cloud Atlas, which people will tell you is good, loves this shit. A whole segment. It's all people.
Is that right?
Oh yeah.
I did not see it because I was just like, I just fucking can't.
I like the Wachowskis fine, but everyone needs to relax a little bit with the film Cloud Atlas.
Well, I mean, there's a lot.
Dude.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I wasn't saying anything, Kevin. I was just stunned that that's in that movie because I read maybe like fucking 30 pages of that book and was like, absolutely not.
Wait,
and then when that movie came out, I was like, absolutely not. But I didn't know that was going on in
there. Is Tom Hanks like playing a Chinese guy or something?
I'm pulling up an image right now.
Yeah, you got to get it.
Man, it's going to come through the chat. It means we're going to be on a list.
I am glad that we brought up the Wachowskis because multiple times in this film, Joel Grey dodges bullets and Remo Williams eventually learns how to do this too. So I think this was a definite influence.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you think so?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, it's kind of Matrix-y in the way that they're dodging bullets. Obviously, they're not doing full-on bullet time, but it's sort of like that
idea.
No,
you're right. Yeah.
If I get enough fucking martial arts from, obviously, this is from the source of all martial arts. This is like the primo martial art.
Yeah,
if I get that downloaded into my brain, I can fucking dodge bullets.
So this is, I just forwarded in the link. It's
what Hugo, am I looking at?
That's Hugo Weaving and I believe Jim Sturgis.
Yes.
No.
Both of them.
No.
Yeah, man.
No. No way!
And this is in the year like 2012 or 13 or something.
I forget.
This article was written 8 years ago, so 2012.
Yes.
Oh my god!
This is actually real, man. Fucking Hugo Weaving, dude. I thought he didn't pass as an elf. And looking at this,
this is awful.
It's terrible. And I mean, and that movie's
Jim
not-
Sturgis. Oh my god, though. Too.
I
look
mean, first
at
of all,
it.
Casting Jim Sturgis, you should be fired immediately.
I don't know. Whoever thought that was a fucking good idea for anything?
A lot of people did, and they were all wrong.
He's
in that fucking trash heap known as Across the Universe, that Beatles movie.
Oh yeah, I didn't see it.
He's in that card counting drama with Kevin 21. Spacey. Yes.
Oh yeah, I didn't see it.
He was just a guy that people kept trying to make happen, and it never did, rightfully so.
Yeah, fucking flip the switch on that.
And, you know,
shit.
much like 2 weeks ago, sometimes the voters are right. Just, you know what? I mean, look, The Matrix is fantastic. I haven't seen Speed Racer, which people love.
Dude, Speed Racer. Listen, Steve, you know, you just brought up the election. You are a gentleman who lives in New Jersey. Get ready for those dispensaries. When they open, stock the fuck up. Go home. Wait till the sun goes down. I also know, Steve, you just invested in a beautiful new 4K TV.
Mm-hmm.
Put on Speed Racer, and I'm telling you, have the time of your life.
I'm kind of excited.
Like Jupiter Ascending, previous episode.
Yes.
Dog shit. What? I'm
Crash
sorry.
Fire.
That's the thing. Is that Wachowski? It's desperation because Wachowskis make original movies that are very outlandish and bombastic, and therefore people are like, okay, this is better than just the normal shit. Every single just another franchise material.
Which is fair, and I want to stop some tweets there. I'm just saying that's fair, but at the same time,
the movies
like,
suck though. The movies suck. Yeah.
Don't act like they're hitting home runs every time.
Exactly. Originality does not a good movie make, necessarily. And
Speaking of casting choices, too, man, what the fuck's that guy's name? Eddie Redmayne?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I hate that guy.
He sucks. That guy fucking sucks.
I was kind of hoping when Johnny Depp said, I'm resigning from fucking Fantastic Beasts. I'm like, where's Redmayne's fucking letter?
Yeah, exactly. All of them. Flush all of those
things.
Where is
fucking Fantastic Beasts resigning from Warner Brothers? How about that? That's what I'm
saying. Totally. It's a franchise. It's a franchise. They have to keep it. It doesn't matter what happens. It has to stay.
Well, I mean, clearly they were trying to start a franchise with Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins, but, you know, that didn't come to pass. So it's okay to cancel a franchise.
It is.
That's all I'm saying.
So, yeah, he's got all this mystical powers. He's like dodging bullets. And again, the choreography isn't good. That's the problem. Like, it's supposed to be cool and fun. And like Fred Ward is just like he's doing like a bunch of one-liners at him, and it's kind of whatever. He disarms him, and then he realizes that he is going to train him. This is when they move into the shitty Soho loft, and we've got like 45 minutes of training stuff.
I mean, I timed it, dude. When the first like big action scene happens in the movie, which is him farting around on the Statue of Liberty scaffolding, 63 minutes into the movie. Over an hour before the movie that's over 2 hours starts.
Not only that, that the Statue of Liberty fight more interesting than the climax of the film.
Oh, yep, absolutely. The movie blows its load way too early because it's so. That's actually, I mean, it's the best part of the movie. It's pretty good. I can see people who like this movie, having that overshadow it. Like, well, that sequence was really good, and it is because they actually get to use the Statue of Liberty a little bit, and also all that stuff. But man, oh man. Is that it's so far away from where we are.
And I think your suspicion there is correct, Steve, because when I was watching this movie, similarly to Cabin's, when he texted us like, oh, that's Joel Grey, I tweeted out like, I'm watching Remo Williams' The Adventure Begins for the first time. This movie is stunningly racist. And a lot of people were like, yes, most definitely. But that Statue of Liberty scene, exactly. I think like that really does hold on. And I'd be curious if those people think that that's the end of the movie.
Because
if it was, though, yes. Like maybe it's something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, probably not, but maybe. But like having it come directly in the middle of the movie, absolutely not.
That's the end of Remo Williams. The Kate Mulgrew story keeps on going for reasons I don't understand.
So I mean, we should quickly mention that, but at least outline it a little bit, because that is essentially the plot of the film somehow. Okay, so there's a defense contractor. What's good about the movie, and I will say this, is it's kind of anti the military-industrial complex. There are evil defense contractors that are manufacturing the AR-60. Get ready for that, future folks. You're going to fight for your right to own that for some reason.
They have an actual, like, a James Bond villain, George S. Grove. And, note of realism here, he's from Albany, New York, a center of evil in the universe.
I was like, excellent, dude. I cannot recall the last time there was a fucking movie where the bad guy was from Albany.
Well, that was, isn't that Nexium show?
Yeah, The Vow.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess if you want to go in nonfiction, you got that. You got Alex Gibney's Client 9, the Elliot Spitzer prostitution documentary.
Quite a rogues gallery you're developing up there in Albany, New York.
Yeah, I guess that is very true. It's more nonfiction horror. I think even fucking Ironweed was based on a true story.
Yep. That sounds right.
This villain needs some charisma. This guy is not doing it for me.
No, I don't know where they fucking found this dude.
It's like sub Buddy Garrity. Like,
yes. Kind of,
I'm like, just you need a better actor or like a more charming fat guy here. Yes.
This is Charles Chaffee.
And then there's some other guy who's his number two who looks exactly like him, and both are so unappealing. I keep mixing up who is who.
Well, so there's Charles Chaffee, who's George Grove. You may know him. We were actually just talking about this. We're doing back-to-back records today. We just did the China Syndrome episode, where we bring up the film Clute. He's in Clute. He's in Shaft for fashion. He was in the Newsies movie.
I mean, again, there's nothing on the page. That's the problem.
Right. And then there's the other guy, though, who's like, the like you said, Steve, the number two, and I think you're referring to Michael Pataki, this other guy, Jim Wilson.
Yes.
Who's the dude that he's in he's in Rocky IV because he's one of the Russians, I think. And then he's in like Halloween. He did a lot of horror. He's in Halloween 4, he's in Graduation Day, but also like this is one of the most interesting credits I found from this guy, and I want to go back and see him in action. In Easy Rider, he's credited as Mime Number 4. But you're right, these two fucking old ass white guys look exactly alike,
and it just, they're like, and he's like the boss and he's not, and like that's it, you know what I mean? Like that's the structure. And like now, meanwhile,
you referring to the henchman at all, the guy with the diamond in his tooth?
No, that's a third guy.
Okay, yeah, that's the other part of this nefarious military industrial complex organization that is fully embedded with the military in this movie. Right.
And this guy is like a garbage, like Jaws knockoff.
Exactly. And what's her face, and Kate Mulgrew is like, she's an up-and-coming army officer on a base, and like they're about.
She's
to do
a major. She's doing pretty well so far.
So she goes into this general's office, played by George Coe, who I would have. I mean, there are so many people that I think are Lasard from Police Academy, and this man,
yep,
is definitely him.
Really?
As well.
George Coe pulled the wool over your eyes, too?
I thought it was Lasard. Now, I really did.
Is he Punky Brewster or not Punky Brewster?
He's not Punky Brewster either.
Okay, that's Eric, what I was getting.
No, the guy from Police Academy is literally Punky Brewster's grandfather.
See, that's the thing.
Oh, Lasard, okay. Lasard and Punky Brewster's adopted father are the same person.
Okay, and then you've got the guy from Empty Nest. Is somebody else also in this realm?
And those two guys, Lasard and that guy from Empty Nest and the Golden Girls.
Yes.
Was who I always got confused with. But, like, George Coe was in, like, the first Stepford Wives and, like, Kramer versus Kramer. He died, like, 5 years ago. He was on West Wing for a fashion, I think.
He voiced Woodhouse on Archer, which is kind of funny.
Yes, that was one of the bigger modern things. Yeah. I mean, so this dude just worked. Oh, funny enough, actually, just looking at his IMDb, he also was on The Golden Girls at some point.
George Cole was like kind of the John McCain in the West Wing. It was kind of weird.
Oh, okay.
Yes. That's exactly right.
He's the general who's also in on it, and she's just like, listen, there's some irregularities here and there, and I want to figure out what they are. And he's like, I better alert my devious master about this information. And meanwhile, yeah, exactly. Wilford Brimley is like watching on a computer, going, ha! That's some hell of a movie I'm not in.
Dude, he may as well have like a big old like Dr. Pepper and Mr. Popcorn situation, because all he is doing is watching the movie along with us.
Now, Mr. Director here, do you want me to pronounce my left butt cheek be a little up in the air or my right butt cheek be a little up in the air for this take? I could go either way. You know, this is my process.
And Kate Mulgrew's whole thing as this major is she is responsible for sort of overseeing, you know, the weapons that the military is purchasing from this dude Grove. So she's like, well, you know, Mr. Grove, there's going to be the AR-60 test pretty soon. We'll be checking that out. I'm sure it'll be a very stimulating scene in this film. I can't wait to do it with you.
It's an excellent Kate Mulgrew, by the way. Because she's just so Catherine Hepburn. She really
is. It really is. You just like sort of dial back the mid-Atlanticness of a Catherine Hepburn impression, and you find yourself smack dab in the middle of a Kate Mulgrew impression.
I actually looked her up today because I was like, where is she from? This is not America.
Yep.
I thought she might have been Canadian, like Shatner.
No, she's from like Iowa or something, isn't she?
That's correct.
Love that Kate Mulgrew, man.
She's coming back, by the way. They're doing a cartoon series, I think, of
Kate Mulgrew?
Of Janeway.
Really? Yeah, they're doing it's CBS All Access. I don't entirely know what it is. It's like a Star Trek show that's like geared towards kids in some way, and she is returning as Captain Janeway to do something with it, which is pretty badass.
She is very similar to Catherine Hepburn, minus the opportunities.
Yeah.
They never gave her any chance to do this.
I think she was stuck in TV. I mean, in a way that a big franchise like Star Trek or Star Wars is a curse. I mean, it really is.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, no, Star Trek giveth, Star Trek taketh away, man.
She would have been good in like an Alan Parker movie, Robert Altman type stuff. She would have been great.
Also, she was also famously tricked for narrating a documentary claiming that the sun revolves around the earth.
Oh, yes. I forgot about that.
Yes. That was like recently.
That was
like
a couple years ago. She's like, I didn't know it. Listen, guys, the check came in, blah, blah, blah. But that's pretty fucking funny.
Wow.
You know what's not funny is the running gag of Joel Grey's character, Chun, or to hear Wilford Brimley say it, Chun! The gag of him like being obsessed with like soap operas.
And it's the mid-80s, and maybe that joke just aged poorly, but like I feel like I've seen that a trillion times. Oh, here's this like butch whatever guy. Uh-oh, he's really into soap operas. That's hilarious.
Well, yeah, I mean like the core of that joke is like the other is a fan of a thing that's not quote unquote for them.
Exactly.
Like that is like the thesis of that joke. And I feel you get this a lot in movies, and again, I can't pinpoint any in the moment, but like a movie where like an alien is taking in culture, or like a Harry and the Hendersons, did Harry watch television? Anyway, you know, like that kind of a thing.
It's
always like soap operas or daytime TV.
Mm-hmm. Imagine Tommy Boy and like Christopher Farley and David Spade like pretending not to know the Carpenters.
Christopher Farley,
yes, Christopher Farley.
Wait, continue that. What were they not knowing?
Like not knowing like the Carpenters because it's too. Like it's vulnerable or sensitive to know who the Carpenters are. Imagine that, except for they're not playing it for comedy.
Right. That you're referring to when they're driving around, they're listening to the radio, and they pretend like, what is this music? No, and then they both secretly love it.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Which is, that is such a fucking great joke. Yeah. Though.
It's hilarious. But like, for Joel Grey to just be like, yes, this is what I like. Okay.
And it's a dumb thing, too, where he's like, oh, yes, like, this is the most honorable of all American entertainment, or the only valuable contribution to the arts America has ever given, because it's about family and honor and business and respect. And then the gag is Rima Williams is like, it's a darn soap opera. And you're just like, I wish fucking anything else was on my television.
The only
right
thing
now
that Rima Williams has going for him as a character is he wants to eat like pure shit all the time.
Right. And big like cheeseburger head.
Well, not even cheeseburger. Like, he's getting cans of shit. Like,
a little Hormel chili.
I think he's eating Hormel chili like it's fucking cuisine. And like, he's trying to sneak it in with Chun, and Chun is like, no, you have to eat brown rice and whatever else. And like, he keeps like, you know, downplaying American food, which he's probably right about. There's a fun scene where he's fucking around in Chun's apartment. He has to go on all these poles to like ascend to something, and that kind of never comes back. Like, you expect that to be like, and then at the end of the movie he's gonna do that, right?
Well, right.
I think they try to call that back with the scaffolding on the Statue of Liberty.
Again,
but again,
a thing that should happen at the end of the movie.
If that was the end of the movie, we might have something here.
You're totally right, man. Which is, what a fucking botch job. And I'm sorry, like, If ending your movie on top of the Statue of Liberty was good enough for Alfred Hitchcock, it's good enough for you, Remo Williams.
As opposed to a fucking dirt fucking field, you know what I mean? Like,
totally.
In the middle of, like, I don't know, suburban Pennsylvania, like, nobody cares.
Also, he's hanging off a log. That's the end of the movie. He's throwing logs at people like Donkey Kong.
In this nonstop training, we also get, like, ledge running, of course, a very important skill.
Oh, yeah.
But Joel Grey also mentions that the House of Sinanju, which is the Korean town he's from that originated everything. And this is sort of like a Ra's al Ghul type of thing, that they were responsible for the deaths of notable historical figures such as Alexander the Great, mm-hmm. Napoleon, and Robin Hood.
Mm-hmm. Genghis Khan also.
They fucking killed Genghis Khan. They killed Robin Hood.
Yeah, what is that specifically?
And the joke is, he's like, well, he was a bandit. It's like, Jesus Christ, who am I working for here?
Exactly.
And there's a bullshit thing, like, Rima Williams is like, oh, that's ridiculous, Chun. Everybody knows Napoleon died in his bed. And Chun's like, but did he? And you're like, oh, man, I don't give a fuck.
Okay, Remo. Yes, maybe we should have intervened with Hitler, but we decided to let him roll.
I trained Hitler. Adolf came, and he did the House of Sinanju very well. He did the polls.
Guess they had zero beef with Hirohito, huh?
He ran around on the polls, and then he ran around on the polls, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, my God.
Yes, Hitler and Hirohito, very good, but Stalin was the best.
And there's also like this gag where, like, you don't know how old he is. He could be hundreds of years old, because who could know with those people, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's exactly what that joke is, dude, and you can fucking stick it up your ass, screenplay.
So basically, Kate Mulgrew has to go to New York first of all, there is a training thing of the AR-60 that kills some dude, which is kind of fun.
It misfires and fucking blows this dude's head off. And it's kind of a funny thing where, like, they're running the training simulation or whatever, and all these dudes are firing this AR-60, which I'm sure makes all these militia people in Montana hard watching this movie. And then, like, this one guy, they're like, a guy, like, kind of strays off the course, and he's like, geez, there's something wrong with my gun here. And all the other army people start making fun of him. Like, oh, hey, Johnson, you know, you're going off track there. Oh, Johnson's fucking it up again. And this guy is just like, click, boom, and his fucking skull explodes due to the backfire of it.
This is exactly where you can tell what the difference between this and the James Bond stuff is, because usually after something like this, and she's like, I'm going to tell everybody about this. This is, you know, this, we have to go back to square one. And like, you would just see like the military be like, no, we aren't.
Yes.
And this time it's the actual villain, like, stuffing his shirt back into his pants, half a hot dog in his mouth, being like, ah, yeah, you can't do that. Could you please not do that to me, please? Yeah, we'll kill you. Like, no subtext whatsoever, no subtlety, just like, blam, we'll kill you.
Yep.
And it's great because so she goes to New York and to do something. I literally can't care. We get some great footage of Bryant Park, which made me very homesick.
Yes, dude, man. I saw those shots of 42nd Street and I was like, oh, yeah, that's where like the fucking eye doctor school is right there. I was like, oh, man.
There is a lot of good on location New York in this movie. Eventually, we see one of the dudes leave via ferry. I mean, actually, Remo Williams gets tossed into the fucking East River at the start. So there's good New York moments, at least.
You get, it's in the dullest dog dick training sequences, so you can't even think about it. But, like, Chun takes him to Coney Island, and he's making him, like, climb the Wonder Wheel.
Yes.
Everybody get a look at this carnival barker.
Oh, yeah.
Uncle Lewis from Christmas Vacation.
Blessing.
William Hickey.
Yes, dude, I couldn't believe it. It was so, and he gets a at the end of the movie. In the credits, and William Hickey as scumbag carnival barker, like whatever the line is.
They didn't move to a new house. It's a popover. Grizz, if you're not doing anything constructive, why don't you go in there and get my stogie?
Oh, man. I watch that movie every year, and it's a masterpiece.
It's the best.
Yeah. Oh, actually, around here, nothing to do with anything because it's just more training sequence stuff, but we're really reinforcing the fucking horribleness of it all. Joel Grey watching television again, back to his soaps, while he's, like, sitting on his fingertips.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I really just hate it. Hate it.
Around the Bryant Park scene, he runs into the henchman with the diamond tooth. They kind of get into it. So now, like, they are aware of the, because they've been following Kate Mulgrew. They're now aware of this other organization that may or may not exist called Cure that's out to get them. So, like, the heat is kind of on. This leads to the Statue of Liberty scene, which is the best scene in the movie by a mile.
Big time.
And, like, Chun is like, you have to get over your fear of heights. So we're going to be at the top of Statue of Liberty with all the scaffolding, which is.
Right. And so while he's up there with the scaffolding, Mr. fucking Diamond Tooth guy hires, I guess, the three most crooked construction workers in the five boroughs.
Yeah.
Cause like the scene cuts to like the base of the, in Liberty Island, like the base of the statue. And it's just this Diamond Tooth dude, like, paying off these three guys, and it's like, I think he's counting like the number of $20 bills because it's like a, you know, 25, 26 kind of a thing.
I just love how it's like, oh, American James Bond, who would he fight? I don't know, construction workers?
Yeah, but these like construction workers are doing like proto parkour and like they're acting like polecats from Mad Max Fury Road. They're like,
I mean, it's, I guess you're supposed to buy the idea of like they're just up there all the time, they're much more comfortable on swinging from the rafters.
Yeah,
or whatever.
We specialize in construction assassinations. Well, we only do it at construction sites. We can't do it anywhere else. Sorry.
But they're also like demons from hell because they're like giggling the whole time.
Yeah.
It's very creepy. I will give it that.
They go like 1 to 10 on the evil scale pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think these are the guys that got Hoffa.
Probably.
put them in the foundation.
So they're like chasing them all around and everything, and all I'm thinking about is like, man, the movie Saboteur is really fucking great. Mm. Wish that was on anyway. So you know, they're chasing him and everything, and then like at one point he jumps on something and like a bag of wrenches falls off.
Yes.
And they think that he fell to his death, and they all kind of like, you know, they give up like, ah, job's done or whatever. And there's one guy that just goes, okay guys, it's Miller time. And these two other assassins are like, yeah. So I guess like a bag of fucking wrenches fell and they thought that dude was dead. Whatever.
They get into an elevator, but Remo's alive and he starts to attack them. And again, I mean, like, this is, they cut between like obviously a model of the Statue of Liberty, and the Statue of Liberty was close. So they do get a lot of really close shots. It's cool. It's very cool.
Yeah, it works out well. They for all the stuff where they had to be close on the statue, I was reading, they built like a life-size replica of that part of it in some space in Mexico or something like that. But you do get a ton of, and it's very interesting, like time, you know, documentation through cinema, like you just said, Steve, like the Statue of Liberty in when they, so filming the movie like 84 or whatever, was under construction, and like that scaffolding was real all over it. It was pretty great to use it in the movie.
And most Bonds, at least these days, would not let like 30 minutes go by without a scene like this coming back.
Yes.
And right. Also, you would have more of fucking Remo Williams talking with the villain, like a tete-a-tete. Like, you're supposed to know each other. But since this guy is, you know, might as well be a used car salesman.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I think they try to get at that. I mean, we kind of jumped over it. But in Kate Mulgrew outside Bryant Park, Remo Williams does try to hit on her unsuccessfully in the elevator. And then he starts strangling the Diamond Tooth guy who's in a car, and a policewoman tells him to stop. And it would be cool if, like, maybe she knew him. Maybe there was some tension at all with his past life in New York.
Oh, yes.
That'd be cool.
Oh, yes, of course. Like, he was a cop. Like, yeah, exactly. You know, like Martin or whatever his name was. Yeah,
There needs to be something of his past to come back and bite him. I know he was the perfect candidate or whatever, but I need there to be a movie to be a movie.
No, yeah, I agree. Yes, I agree with this being a movie. It would be cool. And he just quickly dispatches these dudes, and it's kind of funny. He throws them around, and
but here's the thing, man. He doesn't kill them.
Yeah, you're an assassin,
and
right?
Fuck this, right? Fuck this. Like, kill these guys. Like, he knocks one dude unconscious, and the guy just like falls in the floor of the elevator. Another dude gets knocked out, and then like there's one guy that he pushes, and I was like, oh, rad. He fucking, because there's like a rope involved and you can't tell what's going on, and he pushes him out of the elevator car, and I was like, oh, cool, he just hung that guy. And then when they cut to the exterior and you can see what's going on, it's the guy's hanging from his ankle, and I'm like, no, murder these men.
You know how easy it is to make like an elevator, well, not that I'm speaking from experience, but you know how easy it is to make an elevator go haywire and go crash? Like, do that.
Super easy.
It would be easy to film. It would not cost you a lot to up this body count.
The one guy that loses his life in this scene dies accidentally because he's getting chased by some goons. And you see Remo Williams use this magic shit before Joel Grey does, because Remo fucking runs across, like, these dudes are working in the construction area. He runs across some wet cement. All these guys are like, hey, man, that's wet cement. What are you doing? And he runs across it. And this other like goon chases him. And he goes to run across the cement. And whoops, it turns out it's very deep cement. Remo Jesus Christed his way across it. And this dude just drowns.
Yeah, it's
and
I'm pretty like, cool.
And no one, okay, no one there tries to help him whatsoever.
No. Oh, yes. Nope, dude. It's like he fucking went down for the count pretty quickly. Just take a quick look around. All right, nobody saw it. Nobody, no cameras. That dude was never here.
Fellas, does anybody have a really long stick? Or a pole or something to stick that? Maybe he could get out. I don't know.
It doesn't take, you know, it's not lava. Like, that dude had to drown in that cement for minutes, dude. That is a rough way to go.
It's pretty brutal.
There was a lot
man.
Of time to save him, I'm thinking.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
And then there's one more guy who's about to get him, but Chun gets him with a karate kick or something.
Oh, that's right. Chun does interfere.
Yeah, this is sort of like, so the next scene is Wilford Brimley and Mac and Remo sitting down together and being like, oh man, they're on to us. You know, this is such a secret society. I'll fucking kill myself if we're found out. And Mac will kill himself. And Remo, guess what? You're also gonna kill yourself.
I have to correct you a little bit here, Steve.
Okay.
You said sitting down together. He's already sat.
That's fair.
Wilford Brimley's already on his ass.
He remained seated.
While sit next to him.
But the idea is like we're all going to kill ourselves. And I'm like, yo, Jim Jones, you want to fucking cut me in on the picture before I take my own life?
Exactly, man. Because Brimley's like, you see it right here, goddamn what? It's around my neck at all times. A good old-fashioned CIA heart attack pill. And then the thing with Mac, though, is really weird. Because like Wilford Brimley is just like, I'm going to take this pill. It simulates a heart attack, and I'll be dead. And then Mac's like, yeah, or how about my plan? All of a sudden, a sales clerk finds a man laying. He fell over in the dressing room of a haberdashery, a bullet through his own head. I'm like, why are you going to those? Lengths for that suicide, sir.
Well, Remo, you might find a news story that told of a guy who was split in two because he tied himself to two horses and spanked their asses.
Remo, my thing is I'm going to go, I'm going to change my name to Mr. Hands, move to the Pacific Northwest, and be fucked to death by a horse.
You like that, Chris?
Yes, I do. That's a good one. I like that.
I do love, but like, and like the idea, I think Brimley even says it's like, we will not embarrass the presidency. And I'm like, I don't know, man. They can withstand whatever this scandal is, which I'm not even clear about again also, before I kill myself.
Just having three people as part of an organization, that's not a real thing. You need more than three people.
Exactly. You need somebody in accounting, you need somebody else, you know, like
even a an overworked secretary. Give me something here.
At least M had Moneypenny, exactly. Also, I love that in all of this, Brimley and Mac keep saying that it's like this three-person organization. I don't know, man. Does that mean fucking Chun doesn't get the invite to the Christmas party?
Technically speaking, he is a contractual employee. He's not on staff, technically. You know, he comes up for review every year.
Now, he might have killed Robin Hood. he's just not getting a check every bi-weekly like you do, Remo.
We cannot be just paying for health insurance for everybody. I'm sorry.
I bet that's what it is.
Temp to perm is what he is.
Well, it's the pre-existing condition of maybe being 200 years old or some shit. I don't know. Uh-huh. But the funny thing is, like, you know, Fred Ward is trying to play, you know, his Remo's reaction to, like, the suicide plan, right? As, like, he's, like, a little sort of, like, shocked and disturbed by it. But, like, you don't know anything, nor do you care about any of these characters. So that weighing on this character doesn't matter to you as the audience member.
Well, there's this weird part. It's around here. They're like, all right, we have to infiltrate whatever Grove's secret base to find information. Mm-hmm. And by the way, he's like, oh, well, who would kill me? It's like, well, Chun would. That's why. And he's like, right. He would. There's a scene that's cut from this movie, which you'd probably want, which is where Remo calls him Little Father earlier, and like Chun kind of like spurns him. But you know at that point, at least in the deleted scene, that he loves Chun at that point.
Right. That could have been helpful.
Because like at this point, he's like, you would kill me, wouldn't you, Chun? He's like, yes, I would. And it's like, okay. And he gets like really sad. And Chun's out of the movie for a really long time. Yeah. And it's like, that's something I need in the movie.
Yes, I mean, it would be any type of emotional weight whatsoever, which this movie has none of. And there's no reason for this movie to be 2 hours long.
Absolutely not.
Put that scene back in, cut out some of the training.
Their relationship is essentially that of two employees, one who made a good excuse for them being late. That's about the bonds they've formed in the fucking hour and a half we've been watching this movie.
So Remo and Mac have to break into this facility to get some information on Grove.
You guys pick up on this? It was like there's like a satellite or something that Grove is working on called HARP.
Oh, HARP, dude. I was thinking of you the whole time, every time they said it.
Because HARP with two A's was an actual, you know, government conspiracy theory about controlling the weather. And
right.
I mean, I don't even know why we're going through the AR-60 shit, which comes up again later in the movie.
Yes.
When we have HARP here, like, why don't we pick the one thing? And HARP could be a more of a scary thing. I mean, Brimley earlier in the film alludes to that Grove is big in the Star Wars crowd. He doesn't mean the convention circuit. He means the Reagan military program. I feel like we could have gone a little bit better than rifles. And we try to here, but then we give it up so fast.
Well, see, Remote, here's the thing. Is what Ronnie has up there is a big volleyball net for whenever a missile tries to hit the United States of America. It's a big volleyball net, and it stops them all.
And then Superman grabs it, wraps it around, tosses that shit in the sun.
It's all part of the quest for peace, you see.
You're totally right, though, Eric, because like a weather control thing or even getting more involved in the Star Wars defense system, that's more Bond territory. This whole notion of like this arms manufacturer might get fucked over because there's a design defect in his fucking killing weapon. Yeah. Like,
so basically, the rifles are being assembled like not perfectly. Oh, okay, right. Great. I'm glad we have a movie about this.
Good.
But they go to this secret facility where they uncover this satellite. And I mean, like, this is probably the second best scene of the movie. Also, not the ending with the dogs is kind of fun.
Some great dog acting here. These, like, you know, whatever they are, Doberman Pinschers or whatever, like, chasing him around and whatnot.
And they're, like, super smart, which is kind of hilarious. Like, every time he thinks he outsmarts them. And this is good Fred Ward acting.
I love this scene in Father of the Bride.
It is very really.
You're totally right. Wow. But there's a great line where, like, he jumps up, you know, onto some higher scaffolding, and he looks down and he's like, "Well, let's see you get up here." And then these dogs, like, literally, like, team up, like, do some dog teamwork to pull this other ladder down and, like, crawl up. It's kind of funny.
It is. It is. And, like, meanwhile, Mac is doing other stuff. Remo, I'll be honest with you guys. I looked away for a little bit, and all of a sudden he's in a room with a satellite, and lasers are shooting at him. Like, what movie am I watching?
But did you miss the fucking him getting his dick bit?
Yes, I did.
Oh my god, dude! It's fucking ridiculous. So you've got these attack dogs, right? And then he fucking falls through this window. And then this guy, Grove, I mean, I guess money can buy you anything, because this guy in this facility has attack rats, because these and the rat, like, goes up his pant leg and he falls over because he's all scared about it. But then this rat is chomping on this dude's fucking schlong.
Nice.
It's ridiculous. And I guess the thing is, though, you're supposed to be laughing.
Oh, this was slapping your tits off.
I wasn't chuckling. Well, I wasn't chuckling.
I was turned on for that scene.
I was going to say, if you're going to have this, and it's going to be a Bond movie, like, you would have your Grove, you know, your big villain, like, he explains, like, "This is my moon evaporating ray." Yes, Show him training these nut-eating rats. I want to see him with the cheese and, like, the little, like, testicles that he dangles up in their face. Like,
hello, Mr. Williams. So glad you could join us today while I'm training my rats. Yes.
I mean, that's a great point, because Grove is so he's a piece of toast.
Nothing. Vapor.
Yeah, yep. He's nothing. Yep. He's nothing in this movie. Give me something. Give me mustache twirling of any degree. He doesn't have to know Remo Williams. It doesn't have to be directly a James Bond thing, but flesh out this character.
Well, give me a scar on his face, even. That I'll take.
Exactly. Make it, you know what, honestly, especially because it's called Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins, cartoon it up.
Mm-hmm. Maybe instead of having his handler just die in the field in this scene, have him get, like, taken by Grove, and Grove tortures and kills him.
Well, he does get taken by Grove, and he kills himself, Chris.
Oh, like, but yeah, but, like, at the point where you're just shot, you're like, oh, he's probably dead, right? I mean, he's an old man. Yeah. Like, I'm like, okay, I'm over here.
Because it doesn't matter, right? Because it's not like Grove is like, I'm going to definitely get information out of you, Mac. You know, it's this nonsense scene of he's in a hospital bed and everybody leaves him unattended and he fucking cuts the life support and kills himself. Okay.
Yeah, and like the whole thing is like, well, he's going to die anyway. Okay, next scene.
Yep.
And I'm like, what the fuck? Who cares?
He gets shot in the back. He falls over. He gives Remo Williams a tape with, like, I guess some sort of harp-related information on it.
And he says, "You could stop him, son."
Right.
And then Brumley gets the tape. He's like, "Oh, this is such interesting information. My goodness, what a movie we're doing here." And he's just like, "Oh, wow." You know, like, and the thing is, like, well, you know, that harp was always supposed to explode, and he's just going to make the American people pay for harp 2 and harp 3 and all sorts of different ways.
This was a nice moment, because it's just like, no one's going to be caring about whatever happened to harp 1, because by then they'll have a contract on harp 2, harp 3, and it's like, probably. That, I mean, I feel like that's a good point, Brimley. That's good realism here.
Yeah, it absolutely is. But again, like, it doesn't exactly raise the stakes in this action movie.
He's like, you know what? Instead of us getting a big tax bill on some phony satellites, why don't you go kill that guy for me, Remo Williams? Goddamn, dude, I'm tired of paying taxes on fake satellites.
And this is what's crazy about it, too, is because then we're getting into the third act here, where Remo Williams has to, like, go undercover on a military base to kill this guy. And it just feels like there should be an easier way to kill this guy.
All this army base stuff just bled together in a mess of nothing to me. I like.
Yep.
There's a Lee Iacocca reference at some point. I almost died.
Absolutely.
Eric, this reminded me of, like, the third act of a T.J. Hooker episode. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just we're in a really cheap location. We're going to stay there for a really long time. And it's just, you know, a couple of fights here and there, and the credits are going to happen.
Yep. Yeah. It's, yep, that's exactly right.
Because again, like you guys, we've been saying the entire time, like, Statue of Liberty is a big fucking thing. That's an ending. Even like the weird facility with the laser thing, big enough. You know, it's like getting smaller somehow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If I was able to restructure this film in some way, even though I wouldn't want to keep all this stuff, move the military base to the start of the movie.
Exactly.
Do the fucking HAARP satellite explosion in the middle, and then end on the fucking Statue of Liberty.
It goes, you're right, it goes decreasing from the Statue of Liberty to the laser room with the satellite to a gas chamber.
Yes. Now this is actually an interesting. Now this is where it gets the most Bondish. I feel.
Yes.
Is Kate Mulgrew and Remo Williams meet up and they're walking along and they get trapped in a room by the Diamond Tooth guy and they're going to gas them is the idea, right?
Yes.
And he does gas them. They're gassing. Yep. There's no way out. But Diamond Tooth guy, I guess, was really close to those guys on the fucking Statue of Liberty.
Oh, right.
Because he puts on a gas mask and gets it. Like, Mulgrew passes out. Remo's surviving barely. And the gas mask guy comes in and he's like, I'm going to beat you up because this is for my friends on the Statue of Liberty.
Just let him gas to death.
It's creepy because he's like laughing the whole time. Like, that's creepy, dude.
But this is the best part of the movie almost.
Oh my God, this is like too much.
He grabs the dude and starts using his tooth to scratch the fucking glass pane to make it crack because he's got a diamond tooth, so he's using the diamond to cut the glass.
And you see this guy's mouth like slide off and you hear the noise and literally every hair on my body is standing up right now. I'm not kidding.
It's quite effective.
Perhaps not quite worth it for your friends who had a rolled ankle and a black eye.
And then, yeah, exactly. They weren't even murdered.
And I feel like Remo Williams kind of like bets it all on that tooth because he's like, okay, I scratched the glass twice. I'm going to jump into it head first at full speed.
Luckily, it's so dumb. I mean, he makes an X. So it's like, there's a part where there's like, it crosses over. It's now there's a definite weak point in it.
Yeah.
But like, then just take that dude and throw him through it.
Yes.
Do you think, know?
Yes. That would be amazing. We could get some dummy work. It would be a more fun movie if he actually really punished the flesh of these men.
You know what it reminded me of? And I think this movie must have been in whatever prison they keep Sean Connery in The Rock, because he does that with the quarter. Womack, why am I not surprised, you piece of shit?
Oh, Womack, I'm going to haunt you from beyond the grave now.
No, they're hunting each other in the afterlife.
Oh, Womack. Oh, right. Yep. Oh, man. I forgot he was dead.
Man.
Then it's a suite at the Fairmont Hotel.
Some snacks and cold drinks, Womack, and hell for you.
All the best people are dead.
They are, sadly.
Stay tuned for some Sean Connery programming.
Oh, We're thinking about it.
So he throws himself through this window and then I guess gets Kate Mulgrew out of there. They escape into the woods. And because, you know, everybody in the theater was fucking clamoring for more Chun. Where's Chun? Here he comes at the end of the movie for no reason.
He like rescues Remo again. And he's like, you're here. And he's like, well, I've always, oh no, not yet. Like, he's like, you're here, blah, blah, blah. And now they're all together in a van that just kind of gets like run off the road. Here.
Dude, and here's the thing. Like, there's so much of this movie where, like, you can sort of get a whiff of an action sequence about to start,
yes,
and then it stops, right? Like, that gas chamber sequence, if it's a Bond movie, Bond not only has to break out of that gas chamber, but then he has to get himself and Kate Mulgrew out of the facility, which is him encountering more thugs along the way and whatever, right? That doesn't happen. It's like he jumps through and that's the end of it. Then it's like they steal the truck from these two dudes. This is the Lee Iacocca joke. And he drives off and you're like, okay, well, I guess they're going down like a kind of crazy like mountain range. The brakes go out on the car and you're like, oh, okay, so here's the big like action scene with the truck. Nope, that just fucking goes off a cliff. They all jump out or whatever. And then, like, any kind of car chase momentum is just stopped dead again in the movie.
Yep.
And absolutely. Oh, and also all the shit with Chun right here, where he sees Kate Mulgrew and he's like, oh my God, it's a disgusting woman. What are you doing here? Women should be home fucking making babies and whatnot. Aren't I a stinker?
And, and the best part of doing this while wearing Asian face and making a, and having a horrible accent. Isn't that fun?
Yeah, come on. Yep. Now, Spanky, let's go home.
And they sort of realize Chun survives, kind of a thing. And this is when he's like, you are like my son or whatever. And it's like, and Remo gets all choked.
Little father.
Yes, a little father comes in.
Okay. And so he's Remo Williams is like, all right, you guys hang out here. You know, I'm going to go fucking blissfully finish up this movie as fast as I can. And so, like, Chun is there with Kate Mulgrew, and she's going, you know, she's just saying, like, I can't believe Remo's leaving us here. What are we going to do? Blah, blah, blah. And he just does a, I'm going to do a magic pressure point to, like, shut this woman up.
It's
like,
insane.
That is the joke, is like, this fucking woman is running her mouth too much, and I'm going to just, like, grab her wrist so she, like, goes fucking paralyzed and stops talking.
What I was expecting to happen here is earlier in the film when Chun is making, like, dinner of, like, rice or whatever, he's saying, like, oh, sex and whatever, you want to know about sex. Like, if you touch a woman, if you touch a woman's, like, wrist and you mimic the pace of her pulse, she will like, have an orgasm or something. So I thought Chun was like fucking getting her off here, but apparently not.
So like he's running through the forest. There's just this nonsense scene where he's like dodging a bunch of explosions because they're all like firing these guns again. I think is the idea.
Like the base is on full alert. Everyone's trying to find him. There's like Bandit One and all these troops going to try to find him. And eventually they get to the point where it's like, I've detected a human signature 50 feet above the ground.
Oh, right. Yeah. And he's hanging onto this tree trunk that. What is going on here? Is this a logging operation that he's stumbled upon? Why is this military base moving this log around?
It'd be cool if we knew anything.
But we don't. Yeah. Nope. And George Co. And villain number one and villain number two all get in this in one van together to stop him.
All right, soldier, nail that commie son of a bitch.
That's right. And he won't do it. So they throw this guy off and then they start firing at him.
I like this. The soldier's like, well, he's not going anywhere.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Grove hits him in the face with the butt of the rifle. I thought it was pretty extreme.
Yeah, dude, a little bit of an overreaction from Grove here. But then so he like Grove starts firing at Remo. You guys get this fucking Fred Ward delivery here?
No.
He's hanging onto this log or whatever, and it's like the gunfire is raining down on him. And you just hear Fred Ward go, oh, no. Well, you're like that level of like, oh, no. But yeah, then he like takes out a fucking machine gun that's on the truck, and he's really trying to kill this guy, and it just does not work. Remo Williams decides the move is he's going to let this log go. Right on like a bunch of other logs. Those logs then fall down a hill, nail this Jeep. All these motherfuckers go flying and explode.
Right. Now, this is like Remo Williams is like, I'm going to Ewok these fuckers.
He does. He Ewoks them, dude. Cleaning their clocks with the magic of the fucking power of the Ewoks.
But then, like, you think Grove is taken out. But, of course, Grove comes back for one last scare.
Dude, and this the makeup department here. I mean, I guess they were so concerned about making Joel Grey look as impeccable as he does in this movie that they couldn't bother to make this motherfucker look like he had just been in a Jeep explosion. I mean, this guy walks out of the woods like he's fucking hungover.
He's got like a little bit of blood near the side of his face.
Right, like I said, hungover. Ooh, ow, yeah, exactly.
Just holding his arm.
You're like, wow, I think I messed up my wrist.
And now we got a call back to Chun's ability to dodge bullets. And Remo Williams is now full on dodging these bullets that Grove is shooting. It's a bit fantastical.
Well, honestly, Eric, bullets. We saw 2 hours of him training. So was that enough for you to understand that he could do it or no? Well,
great point, though, Steve, because there's a mention at one point. So when he's running around, he's diving through piles of sand out on Coney Island or whatever. And Mac is like, hey, I need to borrow Remo Williams. Like, there's a mission that he has to do already. When do you think he's going to be ready? And Chung's like, Chun's like, oh, yeah, maybe in 15 years, 4.5 if we're lucky. It seems to me like the month of training, because Remo is like, I've been living in this apartment for a month at one point. So that's it. He's had a month of training. Right. Seems to me diving magically through piles of sand, running on wet cement, you know, all of this shit maybe is going to take more than 30 days.
Andrew, you're completely right. He's a Marty Sue, and I fucking hate it.
So, you know, he kind of gets at a little bit of the bullet dodging. Like we said, he does the same thing that Chun does at the beginning of the film to Remo, where he grabs the gun, you know, comically flicks all of the rounds out of the whatever the fuck and puts it back in the gun, you know, and kind of hands it. He doesn't hand it back to him. He just kind of like holds it or whatever. And the guy goes like, you know, who are you? This is what's weird. There's the flaming Jeep is like standing on the beach or whatever. And Remo like pushes this guy over it, like some fucking rowdy frat guy bending down behind him. And Remo fucking tripped this
yes,
guy.
Yes, exactly.
Like he pushes him over this car. And then the guy like stands up a little while later and he's like, you know, who are you? And he just goes, Remo Williams, and fucking takes a twig.
Yes.
And uses his powerful hands that Joel Grey trained him to use to like sort of just rub this stick until it sets on fire and tosses the stick down in a gasoline pile and boom, that guy finally
dies.
Boom
goes the dynamite.
He finally dies like off screen. You know, you see the
big time.
You see the truck explode while Remo's walking away and it's such a letdown. This whole movie is a letdown.
It is. It really, really is.
We get one shot, which is the greatest shot of the movie. We cut back, and like the rest of the time, Wilfred Brimley has been watching the movie play out on his little supercomputer that he has. But the difference is he knows the mission was a success because he celebrated smoking a little bit of a pipe there. God damn it. Gonna get my pipe out. It's my celebratory pipe. Remo Williams did it.
And there is... Joel Grey does run on water here at the end just to make it really nice.
Because he left to go try to find where's Remo Williams. And
that's, oh my God, that whole, like, I thought the movie was over, man. This is abuse.
So Joel Grey and Kate Mulgrew were waiting by the boat. Where is Remo Williams, right? So they see, you know, so they see the explosion in the distance or whatever. And Joel Grey goes to try to find him. And Remo Williams comes to the dock. He's like, where the hell is Joel Grey? And then he's across the fucking lake, and the military is moving in because you think this is like, holy fuck, now the heat is on. And Joel Grey runs across the water, but looks like the military doesn't care that you infiltrated their base and murdered a defense contractor.
No, they're like, they like kind of cheer, don't they? Or not really?
Yeah, they're like, okay, before they roll up, they're like, Kate Mulgrew is on our side, so be careful.
They're fully ready to assassinate Remo Williams.
But they don't. They don't even pursue him. It's crazy.
Well, I mean, they're kind of stunned because they just saw a fucking human being run on water, I guess. But then, like, so Remo and Chun get away. Remo Williams' last dumbass line, because you know, Kate Mulgrew's like, "Who are you people?" And he goes, "Would you believe we're the good guys?"
Yeah,
and fucking drives off. And then this military dude runs up, like, "Oh, Major, are you okay?" And she's like, "Oh, I'm fine. I'm perfectly fine." And then the movie just ends with Joel Grey standing on the fucking top of this boat, being like, oh, we have to get back home because I'm really excited about all these soap opera plot lines. And that's like the end of the movie.
That's the joke. It's like, oh man, I want to see if little Johnny can walk again or blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh boy, can't wait for the adventure to continue, Chun. Keep that racist makeup on ice because Remo 2 is coming, baby.
All right, Remo, you earned this. Here's your own heart attack pill.
Yeah, exactly, dude.
In case we ever have to kill ourselves for Lord God President Reagan.
This movie didn't have a sequel. It had a follow-up failed TV movie that I guess they tried to make it into a series. It was a no-go, so it's like this 48-minute nothing thing called Remo Williams, The Prophecy. I haven't watched it yet. It is on Netflix or on YouTube with Roddy McDowell as Chun, and you better believe we're still fucking fixing his face up like fucking the garbage people that we are.
Who plays Remo Williams, though?
An actor named Jeffrey Meek. He, in 1998 to 1999, did some sort of Mortal Kombat thing.
Sure.
I don't know. I
mean, sure. It's just really a name you can see up on the marquee. Jeffrey Meek.
Wait, what is this, though? Hold the phone. Hold the phone.
Okay, I'm holding. Holding for Andrew Jupin.
I thought what I was looking at here was a made-for-TV movie to expand the Taken franchise. I know there was a Taken TV show, but this was something in 2013 called Taken, The Search for Sophie Parker, which is not...
It's a TV movie.
Julie Benz was in it. So yeah, this guy, I mean, nothing. TV actor, soap opera
they
actor.
They should do
you know,
that, by the way, for numerous things, like Taken, The Natalie Holloway Story.
Exactly. Yeah, I was looking to see if there was anyone else of note in it, and what a shock, definitely not. Haven't seen it. Is in full on YouTube. That's the end of this movie. Would anybody recommend it?
No, my God, no. I mean, like, yeah, the racism is pretty deplorable, very deplorable in any respect. So that's a one strike. But like, it's not even like 80s racism that like is hidden in a jewel of a film. Like, this movie is trash top to bottom. It is boring as sin. Fred Ward is unconvincing as a lead. Nobody gives a shit, and it is BAD bad.
Nice. Eric Siska?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that. I mean, the thing is, like, yes, is this movie racist? Of course. But if there was anything else that, like, if it had more to it, could I overlook some of that? Maybe not. But but at the same time, like, it would be something, maybe. And this is just not something. And I know why people have been requesting this for so many years, because it is definitely a bad movie, and this is sort of a bad movie podcast. And this would have been probably a great, like, 40-minute episode 10 years ago. Yeah. So, anyway, I'm not recommending it.
Chris Cavan?
An enthusiastic no. Stay away from it at all costs. There's not even, like Eric said, like, maybe you can forgive it. It was the time and the place, all that stuff. Right. If there was something of worth in the movie itself, there is not at all. Everything sucks. It's terrible. Yeah, avoid.
Yeah, no, it's a serious avoid. It is totally unwatchable. In looking at Fred Ward's IMDb filmography, I would say there's probably more value in screening 2004's Funky Monkey.
Yeah.
With Matthew Modine and Roma Downey. Mm.
Say what you will about The Year of Living Dangerously, it's about a humanitarian crisis.
Oh, shit. This is kind of a deep cast in Funky Monkey, actually. We got our good buddy, friend of the show, Gilbert. Gilbert Gottfried, that is. Fred Ward, Jeffrey Tambor. Just like, wow, man. Funky Monkey, indeed. Oh, Tommy Davidson's in it,
too. How about that?
How about that? Yeah, no, fuck this movie. It's absolute fucking garbage. And, you know, all I would say is, like, if this is something you grew up on. Because the other thing I was noticing was a lot of folks on Twitter being like, that was a thing that I loved as a kid, and I've never revisited it. And I would say, if you want to keep that in a little jewel box and whatever your fun little childhood memories are with Remo Williams, don't revisit this movie.
Yeah,
do not.
Good
man.
Call.
That is Remo Williams from the grand year of 1985, directed by the James Bond franchise's Guy Hamilton. I mean, go watch all the Bonds he did. Goldfinger, Diamonds Are Forever, Live and Let Die, The Man with the Golden Gun. They're all a fucking blast. But that will conclude the discussion of this rancid film. And I think, you know, the thing is, I'm glad we got it out of the way and folks can stop requesting.
Whatever. Yeah. I never have to watch it again. That's cool.
Yep. Get some fresh blood in the old listener request month lines early next year. But if you want more We Hate Movies, of course, check out patreon.com/WeHateMovies.
On Animation Damnation, we've got the Ewoks coming at you. That's another one that's been sort of long gestating, kind of a tangential Brimsgiving, just because Wilford Brimley is inexplicably tied to the Ewoks franchise, but not in that show.
Exactly. And in the Gleep glossary, you're kind of going off of that mold as well. We did Sindel Tawani, the young girl that was in Ewoks, The Battle for Endor with Brimley. So we get a little Brimley in the Gleep glossary. And so you folks know at home, our Patreon is stacked more than anyone else's, dare I say. And you don't, like, people, I think sometimes people get this notion like, oh, they're plugging this stuff for the month. If I pay this amount of money, I get this stuff for the month. No, no, no. You unlock everything we've ever did. So if you pledge at the $8 level, not only do you get the Mandalorian Half Hour, which we are recapping now, you get the Gleep Glossary, you get commentary tracks, you get all the commentary tracks, you get all our past premium episodes.
Hundreds of hours of content, no joke.
And I want to say, do a little tease here as we're looking out towards the end of the month. We're getting, or in the end of the year rather, we're getting close. You're gonna want to be at this $8 level for the Q4 commentary.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
the last commentary of the year. You're gonna want to be there for it. Our good buddy Philippe Sobrero has already designed the cover art for it. It's gorgeous and fucking hilarious, and it's gonna be a banger, man. That's all I want to say.
It's gonna be so good. Our December content. It's the We Love Movies month across the board. It's gonna be quite something. You're gonna want to let that pledge ride.
So Steve Sadak, I think we got what, 1 week left in Brimsgiving?
It is the finale of Brimsgiving, and happy Thanksgiving up to you guys coming up later this week, I believe. That's how that works.
Wow, that's right. And all you motherfuckers better be staying home, by the way. I don't need no super spreader Thanksgiving dinners there,
wrong. This will be our Thanksgiving episode coming up next week. Apologies, I guess.
Oh, okay, so next week is Thanksgiving. Well, still plenty of time to cancel on mom.
Exactly, if I can enjoy a Zoom turkey like the fucking rest of us.
Yeah, spread those turkey legs instead of COVID.
We are watching The Firm for the finale of Brimsgiving.
There you go. Probably one of the longest movies we've had to cover on this show.
I'm excited about it. It's got it's a banger of a cast with Wilford Brimley, Tom Cruise, Gary Busey,
Ed Harris.
Nice.
Ed effing Harris.
I am excited and dreading it.
Yeah. Exactly, man. It is a movie you are going to want to start at 6:45 p.m. So until next week with the finale of Brimsgiving, where we cover The Firm, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Steven Sadak.
Eric Siska.
Chris Gavin.
Take it easy.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.